The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Insider Exchange. We are still not sponsored by Starbucks. We are still not sponsored for our coffees or our snacks. So if anyone out there is looking to sponsor us for our snacks, I did see a Cinnabon downstairs.
Where is it? Because I heard it used here, but I couldn't find it. I failed to find it.
You see, so as you come out from the Checkers, right, and you're walking back this way, there's the Wimpy, obviously. Just glance that way. It's pretty much where the Mr. Price is just now.
Yeah, there was a fish and chip shop
there. Yeah, gone. It's Cinnabon now. I saw it there this morning, and I thought, ha, are we Cinnabon
like
people?
Well, truthfully, I make a better sticky bun than Cinnabon.
Okay.
But it's a process. Like, you got to start it on Friday, and you have them on Saturday sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing for Christmas. Cinnabon, your sticky bun thingies, and then the tea. We're going to have to talk about the tea. We're going to come back to the tea. Before we get into the show, I suppose we missed this because we were out. We were both traveling at the time, and we didn't get to do the show. But I do want us to just be sad for a moment, because it is sad. The first pet of Formula One, and I can't say first. Yes, Roscoe. Our heartfelt condolences
to Sir Lewis. The first pet.
He is the first pet of Formula One. I mean, Sir Lewis is the goat.
Yeah, so
therefore, the first pet of Formula One.
Do they knight dogs in England?
They should.
I mean, they do crazy stuff. So,
do you get an extension of your knighthood to your immediate... Because Sir Lewis, right, by virtue of the fact that Roscoe was Sir Lewis's first pet, does that then mean it's... Sir Roscoe? Can we confer knighthoods?
We can.
That way?
I mean, I don't know if anyone will recognize it. We can do what we like.
Well, we're going to do that. We're going to do that. If no one's done it for you, Sir Lewis, we will do it for you. We are sorry for the loss of Sir Roscoe, and that's what we'll be referring to him as going forward. Let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
Unfiltered. 98, our current show collapsing.
Privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studios.
So not even Buffett listens to Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
1 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
And there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Oh, introduce me.
I'm Jimmy McGraw.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
We are moving forward with as many useful updates as we can fit into a compressed amount of time. Today we have 8 updates, therefore we will have an 8-minute timer going. At the end of the 8 minutes, we would have had to have gone through all of the updates. If we can get more in there, we'll see what we do from that perspective. But we are going to get the timer started. 3, 2, 1. The SASA agreement extension. SASA has agreed to extend their master agreement with the Postbank for the payment of services. Postbank administers the SASA grants. That agreement was set to expire on the 30th of September. And I spoke to the team at SASA around that, around the renewal, and whether or not they were unhappy with the post office, what was happening there, and all of those sorts of things. And the feedback that we gotten at the time was that these things are subject to negotiation. It's a 5-year agreement. At the end of the 5 years, you review these agreements, standard contractual things. My main question was, are grant recipients going to be affected? And the short answer was no. I asked if we're going to get an extension. I didn't get a clear indication. We've not got an extension.
Well, you had to, because like they didn't have a plan B.
That's it. This is what happens when you don't have a plan B. And that's the update on that. You've got another 3 months of the Postbank paying out the grants. Next update. Non-farms, sorry.
Non-farms. Non-farms, you mean. So apparently when you shut down the government doesn't produce data. So there was no Jobstarter on Friday, which was unexpected. Well, I was on the wireless with you during the week, and I did say, hey, does this, like, really, surely? And I, because, like, different parts of the federal government do shut down, and some don't, and some are furloughed, and some will get paid when the money comes back for backdated and stuff. And it's an important number because it's a monthly number. Next data point, next FOMC is 29th of October. We don't have more data, although what we do have, I suppose, is this will come out, assuming the government opens before the 29th. The flip side is that the presidents at the FOMC, at the Federal Reserve, they all do their own type of stuff. We also got ADP, which is direct payroll, so in some ways better because unemployment is surveys. But it was weird. There I was sitting there at 2:30 on Friday, 2:31, 2:32, 2:30. Oh, I see.
No data. There you go, folks. That's the update on that. Vodacom wants to provide wealth management solutions and services to the public.
Nope. Just sit down, Vodacom.
See, this is what happens when a service provider has another license, such as an FSP license, and then thinks, because we've got the customer base, we can cross-sell them into anything and everything that we think might be a product fit for them. Mm. At the end of the day, wealth management services, because of how tailored those services are going to be, it's not as simple as slapping on a ETF or a bundled product and saying, hey, everybody in the market, just because you're a Vodacom client, here it is. Will it add revenue to them?
No. I mean, they're all trying it, right? Because what they've got is they're hundreds of millions of users, and they're like, ooh, look at Capitec, only 25 million users, and look how much money they make. What can we do with our 200-300 million users? Let's sell them banking and stuff. Everyone, except you and I, is selling banking product these days.
Let's go get licenses and sell banking products, crowded. Too.
We should go and sell something anti-banking. I don't know, something else. No, man, come on, Vodacom, stick to your...
Stick to what you know. That's the update on that one. Japanese Prime Minister. Yeah. Changes there.
Yeah, so new Prime Minister, lady, which surprised you apparently. Well, I mean, truthfully...
I don't know what surprised me about it. It's not as though... I suppose the history of Japan. It's always been male-dominated prime ministers,
politics.
Governments, politics in general. So to have the first female... Is she the first female prime minister?
Sure. And her name is Sonny Takachi. Mm-hmm. And I said that horribly. Sorry, lady. Fun fact. So she is going to be the first PM in Japan. She's the Liberal Democratic Party, which we've got to understand that sometimes liberal and democratic are used differently in other parts of the world. So she's sort of very centrist. She's a Thatcherite. She loves the Iron Lady. She also, her favorite music is heavy metal. She used to be a drummer and owned a Kawasaki Z400, which is an epic bike. And now I've forgotten what was her favorite, one of her favorite bands. It's gone. I've moved on. But there's, yeah, one of the heavy metal bands. It'll be interesting. So she is a, what's the thing I was going to tell you? She's likes loose monetary policy. So she is expected to, it was Bloomberg who told me her favorite band. So she is interested in giving people money, reducing taxes, promised cash handouts, tax rebates to help households, hinted at raising tax-free income allowance before the end of the year, et cetera, which, I mean, I'm not sure that necessarily is, I mean, I don't know if that's the problem in Japan. What it has done is it sent the Nikkei 225 to all-time highs and sent the Japanese 30-year bonds to all-time highs.
There we go. That's what reform does. That's what change does. Next update, Cartier. Cartier has, the first time in 56 years, launched a new Cartier bracelet. Anyone that knows what the Cartier bracelets look like, you know that they come with a little screwdriver. It's all fancy, fancy stuff. Comes in silver and gold. You know the classic Cartier bracelet that...
I didn't know it came with a screwdriver.
Oh, well, it's got a little... It's a tool. Technically, it's not a screwdriver. It looks like one. But it's a tool that allows you to fasten the bracelet and unlock the bracelet. There's a new bracelet for the first time in 56 years, and I think I might like the new one more than I like the old one. We'll put up a picture of it. We'd love to get your thoughts on it. Yes! See? I like that look.
$9,900.
It's Cartier. That's where we're going to leave that. It's
so
Cartier.
They have one that looks like a bent nail, which is $5,850.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah. That one, that's not the one, that's the new one, though. But that's where we're going to leave the Cartier update, because we don't have more time for that. Next update.
So I'm still shook, man.
Bloemendaal Wine Estate. If you were shook about Cartier, wait for this one.
Okay.
The Bloemendaal Wine Estate is set to go on auction later this month, next week, in fact, in Cape Town.
We are not buying it.
We could, Si, if we could wrangle the reserve amount, plus, I suppose, whatever to outbid someone else. Rough calculations, if we go just above the reserve amount of 270 million, if we put in a bid for 300 million, we could get the wine estate, perhaps, if no one outbids us.
Yeah, but then you got to spend, there's someone building a fancy restaurant at a wine estate, they're spending 200 million. So now you spent $500 million.
Well, this one's already got restaurants and things on it, right? So okay. Lock, Stock and Barrel.
Restaurant is free.
More than one restaurant. Very old winery in South Africa.
My question to you is, how much wine can you drink? Because I can drink a lot and I couldn't drink all of that.
But we're not going to drink it. The idea is that we'll own a wine farm.
That's a terrible idea unless you plan to drink it. If I was younger, mind you, we could buy it for the young man in the corner because he's got time in his side.
Here we go.
And he would have a lifetime of wine.
Here we go.
$200 million for the restaurant, $100 million for the wine farm, $100 million. You got to drink 100. That's a lot of bottles.
That's a lot of bottles. 270 million reserve
bottles
price.
You got to drink. Could you drink a million bottles? I couldn't.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. Although, to be fair, with the money that we were going to raise from our Stokvel, we would be in line to be able to bid for this thing. That's where we're going to leave that because we don't have more time for that. Last and final update for us, and we have no time for this one, is earnings this week. Anything interesting?
What earnings are coming this week? I haven't checked. My bad. So I guess the answer is, how quickly can I click on my numbers? And the shorter answer is not very. It's earnings season, so until the banks kick off.
No one's really interested.
What have we got? We got paychecks, Pepsi, Fasterno Company. I never even heard of it.
We're out of time. Pepsi is the only interesting earnings that's coming out this week. We're going to leave that one there. Folks, if you have useful updates or you have something you'd like for us to take a look at, we can do a quick summary for you, but as long as it forms part of that section, otherwise we'll do a deep dive on it because that's what's coming up next. This is not investment advice. The conversation we're about to have purely is what we're seeing online. It is our thoughts around this. Please do not take it as investment advice. That is why we have a disclaimer in place. That being said, in our deep dive this week, we are diving into whether or not property is the best return on investment or the best use case for your money. This was sparked by something quite interesting, Si. I saw an article that was titled, "Is a Rolex a better investment effectively than property?" And it got me wondering, should people in the day and age that we're in now, right, with how markets have been running, how markets have been at all-time highs across gold, across the resource counters in South Africa, everybody's looking for a return on investment. And typically, everybody's always been told, property is the way to go. Property is the safe way to go and all sorts of manner of things around that. And I thought we've done something similar before because you and I have both looked into alternative asset classes. Anyone that watches our channel knows that I'm a huge proponent of alternative asset classes and there's value in different areas depending on what it is that you have a particular interest in. But would they realistically outperform property? And that's what we're going to dive into this week. That's our deep dive for this week. I think a good starting base for this is kind of getting a bearing of what property kind of looks like, right? So data suggests...
There are Rolexes here that cost more than a house.
And that's what we're going to get into, okay. Right? That's exactly why we have this. Data suggests that there's an implied 10-year return on investment of around 63% on property in the South African residential property space. Now, this takes into account the assumption of a compound of 5% per annum over a 10-year period. And if we look at some other data as well, there seems to be a nominal annual growth rate of around that 5%. This is according to Lightstone data from 2025's their outlook in terms of the property market. Now, we're going to use that as kind of our benchmark, right? I think 63% is the figure that we now have to beat. The timelines that we're looking at are over a 10-year cycle, right? And we're going to look at different investment classes. I know you're looking at Rolex. I don't think we're going to limit our conversation to Rolex because I already know of one other specific asset that has outperformed the property market in that 10-year period.
So I just
period.
Want to point out, this Rolex goes to 600 meters underwater. Who's putting a $60,000 thing on their wrist and swimming with it?
The guy that's jumping off his yacht.
Yo.
So okay. Let's start with watches because you're there already,
Yeah, we're ready and I'm scared already. I also want to be clear. This watch isn't from 1976. It's older than you.
Yes, it is. Significantly older than me. So the watch space isn't governed by just Rolex. There are other watch brands out there. Patek Philippe.
I got a whole bunch of this here. Olaing. I couldn't even say half of them. Cartier. Omegas. IWCs. Mm-hmm. Paneri. Rolex. The Philippe man. Mm-hmm. Vertron Constantin.
Yes.
Tudor.
Richard Mille. So there are a number of luxury brands out there. And in the watch space, there are different tiers. You get entry level luxury. Mm-hmm. You get mid tier luxury. And you get ultra luxury. luxury. Believe it or not, Rolex is not considered ultra luxury in the watch space.
Yeah, because I've seen some of those fashion magazines. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the Rolex are lovely and all, but no.
Some of them also don't make sense, right? So I think it's down to preference and taste, especially when we're dealing with asset classes that are emotional rather than an underlying value, because someone is willing to pay for an asset class like a watch, like a painting, for example. You're willing to pay based on how much or how badly you want that piece. Whereas within property, that is a factor up to a point, but the property space is also governed by what is the market value at that time, what are other properties in that area selling for, some of those other factors as well. What are the niceties that you have on the property? The watch market in general, over the same 10-year period that we'd be looking at to beat the 63%, would have returned 138% or thereabouts.
This watch thing is crazy, man. I just found one I like. 700,000 ZAR.
There we go.
Yes. And to be clear, your Rolex is like easy, right? You buy it, you put it under your bed, you never wear it, you hide it because it's 700,000 ZAR and it fits into a coffee cup with space for coffee. So, like, you know, there's no update costs. I suppose occasionally you take it out and dust it or something like that, but you, like, don't go anywhere with it. You then have to insure it because you're not going anywhere with it. Actually, you hide it.
You have to insure it.
No, because you hide it in your toilet system.
Okay. Mm. And then it gets stolen?
No one's going to...
Household content would never be the same. But interestingly enough,
my household contents are less than this watch.
Yeah.
But property is... So residential property, outside of a few periods and a few locations, the Atlantic seaboard, and a period from about 1999... Well, let's call it 2000 to about 2007. Mm-hmm. Residential property absolutely boomed. Most of the time it doesn't. There's also a lot of costs and update and insurancing and agent fees and maintenance and all of those sort of things, you know, which people neglect in the return. And I mean, don't know if your return is net of fees or not. And also, it's like, you know, like if I want to, I don't know, slip off somewhere and take my 700,000 Rand Cosmograph Daytona Rolex with me. It's a very pretty watch, I must say. Although pale blue is not my style, but I could get used to it. I can slip it on my wrist in my pocket. Whereas my house,
can't
fixed asset.
Exactly. Not exactly movable. We're going to add a quick twist to this, right? Right. So we're going to set kind of an amount in mind because price tags become important, right? How much are you investing in these assets, right? So we've got the 700,000 Rand Rolex there. Have you Googled? Sorry, I see the facial expression, but I want to ask you to Google something. And then I want to see your facial expression after you find out how much this one costs.
Okay.
Rainbow Daytona Rolex. Rolex isn't the top tier of these brands. So I'll have you Google something else.
Rainbow Daytona.
Yes.
They're not even giving me a price, which tells you everything you need to know. That the rainbow,
it's got ruby rainbow colored rubies around the bezel.
It's a pretty watch.
I'll give you a price that I found.
It's
here 8, on a second.
1,800 Rand for shipping.
Well, if it's a 10 million Rand watch.
My price target actually has it at 15 million.
Well, there we go.
But the most expensive Rolex, according to AI Overview, is Paul Newman's Rolex Daytona, which sold for 17.8 million.
Yes. Again, Rolex is not the top end of that market, right? But we're not going to limit our conversation to the watches alone, right?
I'm about to be shook. Most expensive watch?
Yep.
55 million.
Which is?
Dollars. A Graff's Diamond Hallucination. Timepiece of 110 carats of rare colored diamonds. Why is it expensive? I don't know. And then there was a cheap one for 40 million.
Mm-hmm.
That was also Graff Diamond's Fascination. And then the Patek Philippe Grandmaster for 30.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Breguet Grand. See, I just, Marie Antoinette, I can't even pronounce it. They won't let me buy it.
There is another watch brand in the ultra luxury space that rivals the likes of a Patek Philippe, and that is an Audemars Piguet. French brand, very luxurious, sits kind of up there with the Vacheron Constantin that you mentioned, the Richard Mille's, the Jacobs and Co. Well, Jacob and Co's, and the like, right? So moving off from the watches into other asset classes that we could potentially look at. Art has always been one. I don't think looking into art in a great deal of detail makes a bit of sense at this point because it's very subjective. Some people might see a squiggle on a canvas. Other people might lose their mind.
So one of the guys who used to work for M&G Investments has moved across and set up this thingamajig where you sort of collectively buy art is the ideal.
Oh, well, there you go, right? So that's also the other. But whose house does it hang in?
I'd want it in my house.
So if you put enough money in, it can hang in your house. Otherwise, it hangs in other houses.
Ah, okay. Art over the same kind of time frame, 105% return. Again, compared to the 63% benchmark. Not too bad. Mm-hmm. Still outpacing there. The closest I got in terms of the lowest return out of some of the things that we were looking at. Mm-hmm. And I want to look at this before we look at the classic cars, right? So classic cars is one of them. But before we look at classic cars, I want to look at handbags. Not just any handbag.
Okay, so we've done this before.
We've done this thing. Remember the last time we had this conversation?
Birkins, yes. And then there's the lady. What's that lady's name?
Which one?
Grace Kelly. Kelly handbag.
Yes. All part of kind of the same Hermes family, right?
What does a Birkin sell
for? Okay, let's see which...
Because I can buy a Ferrari here for 16 million and it's only done set, but it's black. Who makes a black? Is a blue? No, come on. Okay. Yeah, okay, the first red Ferrari is 15 million.
Yeah.
500 kilometers.
You can buy a Birkin in South Africa. We have some really good guys that we know and perhaps we'll have them on the show at some point.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Shout out to the Lux City team. They the secondhand market and I think they've called them pre-loved goods, and they have a Birkin on sale on their website. It is a 40 in gold. Now the 40 number represents different things in the Birkin world. I think it's different sizes of the bags and all of that. Those that are more clued up on the Birkins, please feel free to jump in here, right? This one is retailing for 350,000 rand. Mind you, this is not brand new.
This is why I had to block Luxity at router level in my house.
Because they kept trying to sell you a Birkin.
Well, just stuff. Look, let's be clear. It is a little bit less than this 2022 Ferrari SF90, which is a beast of a car and is in Lone Hill Sandton. So it is quite close and it's only done 1,600 kilometers.
So I like that you brought up Ferraris because I want to jump to that next. Before
I
jump
to that.
I can
buy a Ferrari for under 600, a Spider. Or 488, 5.2 million.
Okay, so let's wrap up the Birkin conversation. 67% is the average return over the 10-year. Let's move on to the car conversation.
But on Birkin's only 67.
No, specifically not specifically the Birkin, the handbag market. So that could be watered down by some of the other lower performers in the space and all of that. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Onto the cars. Right. Mm-hmm. Classic cars is quite interesting. Mm. There's a team at New World Wealth, a gentleman by the name of Andrew Emoyles. He has brilliant reports on these classic cars. I read one of these reports one of the years and actually gave us context around what was happening in the classic car market and how much classic cars return and all of that. And we've spoken about this on the podcast before, but this I'm bringing up not just in the context of you looking at a Ferrari now, but in the context of some recent developments. Sir Lewis Hamilton, who we spoke about at the top of the show, has been rumored to be selling or to have sold his entire car collection. Now, for context, that car collection, amongst other things, included a McLaren P1. It included a Mercedes-Benz AMG 1, if I'm not mistaken. It had several of the most sought-after vehicles. And the rumor is he sold the entire collection because he wants to pursue one car.
Ferraris.
Vehicle. Mm. Yes, it is a Ferrari, but one vehicle.
Yeah.
Sir Lewis may or may not be, and I suppose we'll have confirmed reports of this, in conversation with Ferrari to have...
To be clear, he's got a cheat code there because like he works at Ferrari.
That's technically, right? So if you had to guess, what would you say is Ferrari's most valuable vehicle ever created?
I don't know. It'll be red. Jen, what I know about motor cars is like scary. Okay. I have no idea.
I'll put you out of your misery. It is a Ferrari F40. Probably the most expensive Ferrari in the market. Anywhere from $3.4 million to $3.7 million, depending on where you find it, what condition you find it in, and all of those other things, right?
It's a nice looking car.
So let me give you...
They all price on request.
Let me give you a bit more context around Lewis's car collection. From a Ferrari perspective, these are the Ferraris alone that he held. The Ferrari, La Ferrari, which you had to own other Ferraris to qualify to purchase that Ferrari. As well as a Ferrari LaFerrari Aperta, which is a completely different version of the standard LaFerrari, which is in and of itself something else. He had an AMG SLS Black Series, the Project One that I mentioned, Pagani Zonda 760. There was a 1967 Shelby Mustang GT500, nothing much there, right?
Yeah, sure.
Only one of the most rare Shelbys that we have. All of those sold, right? Doesn't want to purchase a Ferrari F40, even though he's allowed to. And there might be one out there for him. He's asked Ferrari to allow him to build a Ferrari F44. Now, of course, the 44 comes from his racing number. Mm. But it would be a one of a kind. And
it would be priceless.
I think it would be the first time Ferrari has ever allowed anyone to build a car. I don't think they afforded this to Michael Schumacher.
No. Okay.
So the question then becomes, is how much does that sit? How much is that worth?
Is surely got no price. I mean, surely. But I am looking at a 1983 Ferrari 308, which is the classic design.
Yes.
53,000 kilometers. Okay. Manual, of course. Manual, be strong. It's only 1.5 million.
Uh-huh.
Only 5 times what my wife's car costs. I want one.
1.5 million Zar.
Yeah, Zar.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, but remember, there were a series of vehicles that weren't so great. There were Ferraris that weren't the it Ferrari, right? Like certain GTOs you can get.
So this vehicle comes with manual and pouch.
Okay. I'm going to gander at that and figure that that is where you keep the service book of sorts. Okay.
So there are bad Ferraris is what you're saying.
So there are Ferraris that aren't considered as valuable, which would be like the more common.
Like the blue one.
See what... Like the blue ones. When you say blue, there's only one Ferrari that comes to mind that I saw in blue quite often. This was the Ferrari California, if I remember correctly.
Geez, how do you know this stuff?
They did it in blue. It was in a movie
It doesn't even look pretty. It's like it's not a nice Ferrari.
It is what it is, right? So how I know this is because growing up, I used to have a fascination with cars that I got from my father. And he used to buy the car magazine on a regular basis. And I used to sit there and just study the cars, look at the cars, look at the different things. And so I've developed a great appreciation for vehicles. And so when manufacturers, and I say this specifically related to the German manufacturers, we're getting off topic here.
Yeah, yeah.
When the German manufacturers...
Because Simon wants a red Ferrari, but not a California.
There we go. When the German manufacturers started to come into the market and say, we're going to, as manufacturers of sports cars, abandon the sports car and make an electric vehicle, because that is what EU law requires.
Mm-hmm.
I was outraged on behalf of everybody that is a petrol head. And it wasn't just that. It was, I felt as though there's certain things that should just be left pure and untouched as they are.
Yeah.
Certain vehicles that should just be left as they are. You shouldn't
make a Ferrari California.
And you should you shouldn't make one in general.
It looks like a Mazda MX-5. Now, to be clear, the new Mark 5.
Okay.
I've got the Mark 4, 3.5 or something. Whatever. Okay. It looks like but you know what? That's like a half. That's like, no, come on.
So you're trading in your Mazda for a Ferrari. Is that what we're doing?
Well, I'm not going to get much for my, it's a 308, a good Ferrari.
I think you could get better Ferraris out there.
But for 1.5 million.
For 1.5 million.
So for that price, I can get a California 2010. Don't want it. I can get a blue 456. Don't want that.
Okay.
I can also get a Mondial, but that's got a soft top. I don't want a soft top.
Okay. So.
Okay. Sorry. Off track.
We're going to put a pin in this. I'm going to take a 1.5 million rand budget and I'm going to come back and find Cy a luxury sports car that he will like, hopefully. If you have ideas out there, folks, drop them in the comments. Let us know. We're going to evaluate the ideas. But I've got a pretty good list of kind of where I'm going to go.
I can pick it up anywhere in the country.
Okay. Available for at that price point, we'll have it couriered to you. Don't worry. We'll figure that out. Leave that there. We're going to find Cy a supercar. We're going to wrap up the conversation around the investment case for property and whether or not it's still worth it. That's the big question. Then what did you see? You've seen something else.
An F430. That's a pretty-ish car.
Okay.
Also a little MX-5. If it's only an extra million. Sorry, I've totally sidetracked this. You should... Just not a California. Carry on.
Okay. Anything but a California. Those are the rules. The property market has returned.
Yeah. Sorry, back to the story. Yes.
Risk is the other factor. A lot of people will say, oh, but property doesn't carry risk. Some of these other asset classes carry more risk than the property market and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And in that space, I would then challenge that by saying, look at the current interest rate environment.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how depressed the housing market has been for the last couple of years with sellers not finding value and having to drop their price. There is risk in the property space.
Also, the fact that it's immovable. I mean, I remember coming up to Hillbrow in the 80s, and it was a hip and happening place. There was an exclusive books. There was the biggest record store I'd seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hip and happening, and less so now.
Less so now.
this is a 40-year window, but let's look happened what in KZN, and I know this because I have family and lots of friends there. After the June 21 riots, people fled and property prices have just been collapsing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can buy crazy stuff in KZN right now. Now, there's also a problem, like particularly in the South Coast, they can't deliver you water or electricity and other useful things. But it was, you know, so it's not all of KZN, because of course you could argue the Midlands and stuff, and there are places, but, you know, broadly, there was a decimation of property prices post those riots.
Mm-hmm. So again, like with the other asset classes, it's not all of those products in that space that are bad investments that are going to be losing investments. Mm-hmm. There are some that have done astronomically well, mm-hmm. and there are some that have done absolutely terribly. So even within something like the Rolex family, right, there are certain Rolexes you don't buy because they don't appreciate in value. They simply stay stagnant.
And this comes back to the other point.
Mm.
Not the other point, a new point. So I want to go and buy a Ferrari. All I know is it must be red. Mm-hmm. But no, it must be like there's rules. And when we're buying a property, we think we're the expert.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not. We know nothing. Well, it's like when we bought my wife's car, we got these View for You peeps to go and visit it. Partly because the car was in Cape Town and we buy cars. So. But secondly, even if it was at the Dome, I can go, look, mm-hmm. it's got wheels.
Do you know what you're looking for?
Yeah, I'm looking for 6-wheel. Now, my dad taught me this. One in every corner, uh-huh. one in the boot, and one to steer.
If it doesn't have those.
It needs 6.
It needs 6.
Okay. But beyond that,
here's
my area of expertise.
Yeah.
So it's that we're not, we're doing giant investments. And the whole estate agent game is like a weird thing anyway. But, you know, whatever it is that you're buying, you need to have some really, really good knowledge about it.
Mm-hmm.
And some things like there's bad Rolexes or Ferraris or whatever the case may be that don't make as much money. You know, you could spend a month on Google and YouTube and stuff and you would have that body of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
In the property space, because Hillbrow.
Because Hillbrow. That's the perfect note to leave the conversation on, folks. Remember, this conversation, as we said at the start of the conversation, was not financial advice. Don't construe it as financial advice. There are disclaimers for that very, very reason. We would still, however, love to hear your thoughts around the conversation. What would you have your money invested in if you had the option? If you had R1 million and you could choose to invest it in a property or in anything else, even if it's a small business, what would you invest your money in? Understanding that you are looking to outperform other markets, have a good return on investment, and let's make it interesting. Look at things beyond just a standard index fund, beyond just putting it into the Satrix 40 and S&P 500 and the like. Let's get creative with it, folks. That's the deep dive. That's what we're going to leave it. We used to have a segment called Investor Insights on the show. We used to try and dig into some useful insights and provide some useful updates. We still have useful updates coming through. We still have some insights coming through. But along the way, we started to discover that some of the things that we found out did not make sense. So we rebranded the segment to Make It Make Sense. That's what we're going to be looking into. We're going to be looking into some interesting things that we found that perhaps don't make sense, or they do and we're just not seeing it. This week, we are looking into two things. Firstly, the IDC is weighing up a decision to potentially invest R8.5 billion into ArcelorMittal to save that long steel business and save the jobs there. R8.5 billion. Which, to be fair, is to potentially buy back a business that you sold off many years ago as the government of South Africa. Si, is this a good idea? Make it make sense for me.
You know what? There is a place where it's a good idea.
Because
here's the thing. So steel is currently in global oversupply, mostly thank you to China.
Mm-hmm.
But one day it won't be. And when it isn't, it is a strategic resource. And
so then, why did we sell it in the first place?
Well, we sold it, but it stayed in South Africa. It was still in Newcastle. We could have sent...
Yeah, but we privatized Iscor. Yeah.
So I hear you. So the privatizing of Iscor goes all the way back to late 80s. And I think that was the apartheid government desperately trying to pay some bill more than anything else. I suppose the question is, how strategic is steel? And to be clear, there's also thousands of jobs here. And mm-hmm. But again, R8.5 billion, 3,500 jobs. You could just give everyone their... like
severance packages for a life. So I guess this is why I ask for us to make it make sense. Is the expenditure of that R8.5 billion going to be best used there? Is it going to be best used elsewhere? We've seen bailouts happen at a state-owned entity level. This, for all intents and purposes, is a bailout, whether it's a bailout of a private sector or not. It's the government stepping in, putting down some money to bail out an organization that hasn't been profitable. Now, whether it hasn't been profitable as a result of government legislation, as a result of policy, all of those things are factors that we're not ignoring here. The question still remains, is this the best use of R8.5 billion? The jobs, no one wants to lose any jobs, We can ill afford to lose the few jobs that we have in South Africa. That's not up for debate here, right? Is there a better use for the $8.5 billion to perhaps create more jobs?
Well, I was chatting with someone last week who's talking about, you know, why haven't we doubled down on the hydrogen economy? Mm-hmm. Because we have got all of the input for that, which is PGMs. So mm-hmm. if we could get a hydrogen economy going, then we would have more demand for our PGMs. There are other ways of potentially doing it. I mean, I get that. And you know what, the strategic point of steel, I mean, maybe I'm just wrong about it, because it turns out I'm in the same camp as Donald Trump with that, and that always worries me a little bit. remember, he wouldn't let the Japanese buy the steel company in Detroit. What was it? U.S. Steel. Mm-hmm. And Nippon Steel couldn't buy it until they gave him a golden share and, I don't know, something else, a tummy rub. So maybe it isn't strategic, in which case the question comes, well, $8.5 billion into a company that's failing, and I don't know. I mean, maybe the current managers who were there weren't the best managers in the world to run it. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know. But let's say do you put a manager in who's 10 times better? Does it start to make money? What is the IDC's remit?
For half of that, around $4 billion, I remember correctly, the Mossel Bay refinery and the deal that we had with Gazprom Bank, that was worth around R4 billion to restart that refinery. If we bring refining capacity back into South Africa, it's not going to cost only R4 billion to do so. Might cost a bit more than that. I don't know if we'll get to R8 billion to get that refinery up and running again, or to just build a brand new refinery.
Yeah.
Refining capacity will reduce fuel costs in South Africa without a doubt, right? Mm. We've been a refining country before. Mm-hmm. We've seen how beneficial that can be. Mm-hmm. That's just one example of an alternative use. I'm not saying it's a better use. I'm just saying how do we make it make sense? How do we reconcile what is worthwhile?
And then the really, really skeptic in me says, why don't you wait for it to go bankrupt and buy that bankruptcy?
That was the other thing. If we're going to go into business rescue, bankruptcy, all of those things, jobs are going to be lost or whatever. And worst case scenario. So let's think about it from a private sector point of view, a capital point of view, right? The capitalist would wait for it to go into bankruptcy, wait for all of the retrenchments and everything to happen and for the company to be worth R1, go in, make an offer at R2 and just hire back everybody. Yeah, there's nothing that's going to stop you from hiring back the existing staff and employees, right? And there's nothing to say that, yes, there'll be disruptions. Yes, they'll lose their pay for a certain amount of time while all of this is done. Yes, you can back pay them and reinstate that, and it'll create a mess in everyone's lives, right? But would it cost you R8.5 billion? Is the other question.
Yeah, and their mandate is to maximize development impact through job-rich industrialization. I mean, yeah, steel is...
It fits within the mandate.
It does fit within the mandate.
Yeah, it fits within the mandate.
And particularly...
Is again, the R8.5 billion.
But is that the best way to spend it?
Especially because... And perhaps this is the caveat we should have, or the factor we should have mentioned at the start of the chat as well, was a lot of that is going to go towards settling debt that sits within ArcelorMittal. So that's not going to go directly towards benefiting these individuals, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Give us your thoughts, folks. How would we tackle this particular thing? And most importantly, let's make it make sense, right? The other point that came up that I found wildly interesting, and this is just because I like the drama. Sometimes I like the drama. There was a Russian cargo plane. This is how the story starts. There was a Russian cargo plane that landed in South Africa, fully loaded with cargo. There's rumor that this plane, according to its flight tracking and all of that, was sitting in Iran at some point for an extended period of time before going to Dar es Salaam in Tanzania and then coming down to South Africa. It stayed in South Africa for a bit. Fully loaded is what it arrived at. When it was refueling at Lanseria Airport to depart, it was empty.
How do we know the fully loaded empty part?
That's what I can't figure out. Hence, make it make sense.
Because boats.
Perhaps you have to declare things at the airport. Well, we are arriving with.
And when you're flying, you got like your weight matters because that's how much petrol you need or
that's
whatever.
That's it,
they have.
Right? So it could be very easy to figure that out.
Because boats are like, are they sinking or not? But planes are.
How much do you need to keep it up in the air?
Yeah.
Which would make sense. So there was weight and then there wasn't weight. The question everybody's asking is, where did that weight go and what was that weight?
Did you say it flew into Uitenhage?
Well, flew into Upington.
Oh, Upington.
So flew.
Upington.
Then flew from Upington to Lanseria to refuel before leaving. But between Upington and Lanseria, no cargo. When it landed in Upington, cargo full. Lanseria, empty.
So what happens in Upington? They were going to do the land speed record there in the government. But
that, Sai, that's your question? I told you the plane is Russian. I told you it went through Iran. I told you it went through North Africa. I told you it had cargo. And your question is, what do we do in Upington?
No, because you seem to be surprised by this.
Well, I'm not. And this is why this I say sometimes I'm there for the drama, right?
I mean, we've had boats and probably floats and who knows what else.
But this doesn't help our case when we are dealing with international relations and we say we are non-aligned and things like that.
It does not. But we are quite good at not helping our case.
We are very good at not helping
our
case.
We need toes when we can just shoot them off.
Well, there we go. Make it make sense, folks. If you can help us make sense of these things, if you can help us make heads or tails of what is going on, please, 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 we'd love to know. We're going to leave the conversation on that note before we go. Of course, there is always, always an unfiltered opinion. This week's unfiltered opinion is something our ghost producer dug up. We don't know where he dug it up from. We have no idea how it all works, but there's a game out there. Sai and I have both played this game. Now, I understand the context of the game. I understand the message and the point behind the game. And we'll put up a link to the game, so perhaps you guys can go and check it out and give us your thoughts around that as well. You are given a certain amount of money to start off the game with. There are a certain amount of game rules that apply. And the aim of the game is, within 60 seconds, to make as much money as possible. Now, it seems fairly simple. It seems fairly straightforward. And here's the challenge, perhaps, as part of our unfiltered opinion. We challenge you to go and beat the game, because Sai and I haven't been able to.
And to be clear, I click.
And I click too.
A lot.
Sai, how are you feeling?
I hate it.
Okay.
Three words. Terrible.
Terrible. Okay. Terrible and hate.
Sucks.
Sucks. That's the word. Mine? Outrageous. It left me outraged. Quite simply, that's it. That's the unfiltered opinion. Go check out what we are referring to. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.
The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.